Welcome to Frankly Speaking. I'm Helen Ackerman at George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. 46 years ago, the first performances of the Federal Theater Project hit the stage. The FTP was part of Roosevelt's Works Projects Administration, an effort to supply jobs for out-of-work theater people such as actors, stagehands, writers, and lighting technicians. But America's first and last government-supported theater meant a lot more than just jobs. The project productions were nationwide, and they were cheap. That meant that people who had never seen live theater before had a chance to do so. One person who became involved with the Federal Theater Project is Mrs. Ann Markin. Mrs. Markin acted with the FTP in Chicago. 40 years later, she is now studying those years at George Mason University, which has the major collection of the FTP materials on loan from the Library of Congress. Mrs. Markin is here as part of the Elder Hostel program, a nationwide program for senior citizens. Mrs. Markin, you were with the Federal Theater Project in Chicago. How did you come to join the project?
I was unemployed, and I wanted to act. I wanted to act desperately. We were part of a repertory group, Chicago repertory group. All of us were actors or would-be actors, and we tried to pattern ourselves after the group theater in New York. Stanislavski, of course.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So we were all interested in it. There were people in the group who were writers, and they were unemployed. Many of them were on the Writers Project, among them Studs Terkel, Nelson Algren, Richard Wright, and these were all interconnected. I mean, the writers were. One of the methods we had of working in the group, sort of carried over there, was that the writers would write the actors, and they could see their work in action. The actors would act, and they could see they could hear their works out loud. So we were all The directors, for instance, on the Federal Theater Project were interested in the group because this was all new kind of theater coming up. And they would help us. They would come over and take over a play sometimes. Kay Ewing was one of the directors on the Federal Theater Project who would come and she directed one of our plays. Well, So those of us who were unemployed, we got applied. I had auditioned for the Federal Theater. I passed the audition, but there was a waiting list. And so somebody advised me to get onto another project, and it would be easier to be transferred from another project.
I see.
So I got onto the Writers Project, and when a place opened up in the theater, I got into that. In the meantime, it was a wonderful experience to have met the man who was head of the Writers Project, because he was very interested in young writers, and that was how come all these young writers, they got started.
That was a very rich group of people to have in
that project. It was one of those times when a bunch of talented people get together. There seem to be times like that when talented people get together and then nothing. And it's a particular time. That was the beginning of that. There were many talented people there. And there were people, one of the things about many of the people on the theater project was that they were very earnest and very dedicated. And everything, and this was the days of the method when you, everything had to be true. I had a part in Spirochete. I guess you can tell from the name what that's about. I was one of the girls in the tavern, and in one of the scenes, the man who exposes this whole thing, who knows what's going on, rips my dress off from the top and exposes the sores. So I had to have a sore on there. I went down to the John Ferrar Library, got a medical book, and looked up pictures, and picked out the biggest, ugliest looking one, and spent hours designing it on my chest.
Did you draw your own sore on yourself?
I painted it, yes. I did that kind, yes. We did our own makeup.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that was my, and a doctor had to look at it, and and certify that it was authentic.
That's an interesting play because, for people who don't know, Spirochete was about venereal disease,
yes.
Right? How did people react to that?
Well, strangely, they came, they were a little disturbed. In the lobby, I'll have you know, they were offering to give shots to anybody who wanted them.
That's real life theater, isn't it?
I don't remember whether a lot of people took advantage of that, but they did offer it, and it was people didn't know what to say about it. Mm-hmm. They were shocked, but people who said that. That there was no notice taken of this problem until too recently. You're wrong. It was taken notice of at that time.
Were newspaper editors writing editorials in the paper about how bad this was to do it? Was there any of
that kind of opposition? No, we didn't get that. I don't remember the reviews too well about that. I left those home, I'm sorry to say. But there were other things. So they started public things that you didn't get in the commercial theater. We had first of all, we took plays around to the schools.
Right.
The other one I was in was Rip Van Winkle. You took it to schools where children didn't know what a play was, and they would have us. We would have the scene where Rip was coming home after 20 years. And of course, his daughter didn't recognize him. The children from the audience would say, "That's your father," and get all excited over it. So it was such an experience. We had a dance group. I went around with this dance group that was illustrating a history of dance. Mm-hmm. And so you would, the one woman who was in charge was a solo dancer. She would also do poems, dances to poems. So we had a narrator, which is what I did, and she would dance to the narration. The dances, she would explain what they were in history, how they came about, and we would dance the example.
Were you dancing
to
as well as narrating, or you just
for this particular thing? Actually, I was in there as a narrator, but to save money, she had me do the dancing too. But I had been, we were privileged with teachers. Catherine Dunham was also on the Federal Theater. She had a dance group there.
Yes.
She would give us body movement classes at the group. That was our connection then. So I had been working at that a little bit. I was limber. I was never a dancer, but I was limber enough to just copy until I got to the tap dancing. I couldn't do that. They had to spend hours getting me to tap dance, but I finally faked it.
How did the people react when you took the dances around? How did the children, for instance, react to the dance?
Oh, they loved it.
Really?
They just loved it. And it was a strange thing at that time, I think, to have dance with more than just dancing,
mm-hmm.
to have history with it, and to know where it came from. I really think that the Federal Theater at that time started many of these things that are going on in schools and colleges because they began to incorporate them into their
curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
How did the people of Chicago react to the Federal Theater project?
Well, I can only tell you, after all, I was in this limited circle here, so I know what we thought of it. We all approved, of course. Mm-hmm. But you had full houses.
Mm-hmm.
People who had never been to the theater came. You could go for 50 cents, you could go for 25 cents. Mm-hmm. And the theaters were just filled all the time. So I would say they were very enthusiastic about it. And they got a different kind of play than they got in commercial theater. At that time, you know, you had the love interest, you may have had the musicals. You didn't have plays that were a little more like your own life, you know, and in an exciting way. And besides that, there were people who were not included many times in theater because you had not only this theater, you had a Jewish theater, you had a Negro theater, you had, I understand that there was a several kinds. There was one, I think Italian, I'm not sure which one it was, but you had that. And then, of course, in New York, you had many more different kinds. So it got together people who perhaps had not had a chance to do this before, and I think they continued out of that. So it planted seeds.
When you talk about it, I have this vision of this wonderful boiling pot of talented people contributing, and people outside the theater having the feeling that it belonged to them too, that it was something that they
I think so. Of course, there were always other kinds of people, but this, well, we were in the middle of this, so that's my impression of it. What there was outside, I see people here now who hardly knew that this was going on, and I don't know how far it reached into smaller communities. But in the cities, it reached a lot of people that hadn't reached before and who got them started on not just the theater, but other kinds of projects. Of course, theater is the best way to become conscious of all these things.
What was it like living in the theater, though, at that time? Theatricals are notoriously hard up, and it's always known to be a hard life to survive in. And this was the Depression, so it must have been much worse.
Well, it was hard. I don't remember minding it that much. You got part-time jobs, you got small jobs, and whoever had 50 cents shared it. We helped each other out. Anyway, in this area, we helped each other out. I think theater people are like that anyway. And so, I don't know anybody who starved. I'm sure this was so in other areas, but in this particular area, in the theater, we were together so much that was how we survived. And of course, well, this was the survival. The WPA was the survival.
It was a survival project.
Because you got a job. And then after that, actors left. They got jobs outside. In fact, I think many times plays were delayed because some of the actors got other jobs and they left. So they had to find other actors. And this was their means of survival. That was what saved us.
How did you get into acting anyway? Was it something that you had always wanted to be from a small child?
Or? No, I never dreamed of anything like that. I was very shy, in fact. And I think at about 19 or 18 or 19, or somebody wanted to join a dramatic club in a local community center sort of thing, and dragged me along for company. That was my first experience, and after that, I didn't even think about anything else. I would go to work and just think about that all day long.
You had the bug, in other words.
I had the bug.
Well, thank you very much for coming and being with us today and telling us about what it was like at that time, which seems like a very vital and fascinating period of American theatrical history.
Well, it's been fun.
You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guest or this program, please call 703-323-2138. That's 703-323-2138. I am Helen Ackerman at George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.